KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, offering a new 2025 lineup of vehicles at your local Toyota dealer, including a new Tacoma with turbocharged four-cylinder engines and a hybrid powertrain option. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
This episode features mentions of drug use and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
It is no surprise to anyone that in this day and age, it is a challenge to be an artist. Much more so to be a self-sustaining artist.
And perhaps the biggest feat of all, to truly become a household name.
Especially doing it all by yourself.
That's why finding someone who vibes with you and your work and who can collaborate with you to create something special is like striking gold.
Whether it's music, a movie, a dance choreography, or
a comic book.
And funny thing is that I hadn't made comics. I was starting to make comics. I was learning to make comics. But that grant...
Well, we had just published... We had just published Starseeds, no?
Today we want to tell you about two friends.
Two compadres, if you will.
Giancarlo Ruiz and Charles Glaubitz, two of Tijuana's most prolific artists.
Charles is a respected illustrator and comic book artist, best known for work featured in prominent publications like Rolling Stone and the New York Times, and for collaborations with major brands such as Sony PlayStation, American Airlines, and Miller Lite.
Giancarlo, an independent filmmaker, writer, and actor, has earned international recognition for his short films screened at prestigious international film festivals such as Cannes, Havana, and LA film festivals. His recent roles include Netflix's Tijuana and Amazon Prime's El Rey de la Fiesta.
Yeah, Giancarlo was the money behind the first publication, my first comic, which was not Starseeds, Crystal Sigil.
Crystal Sigil.
The Crystal Sigil was,
yeah. I basically published that.
I bankrolled it
for sure.
They put together a graphic novel titled The Fracture, a series about a dystopian post-apocalyptic reality set in the archipelago of Neo-Tijuana after fracturing from the mainland.
A graphic novel that tells the adventures of a taquero turned monster hunter named Macburro in a dystopian future in Tijuana that is overrun by mutated creatures. But to really tell you about how The Fracture came about, we have also got to talk about the friendship that brought it to life.
Because we were already working on other stuff and he was talking about this, and I was like, dude, let's just do it. Like, let's just do it. This could be the beginning of something. So that little thing created as well, like all these avenues for him, for like all his books, all his like graphic novels, when Charles kind of made peace with the idea of comics, that art, comics also is art, right? That and that he was like, that's all, what he always wanted to do. I think that's the moment that for him as well, things connected and opened up in a different way. Because he was just doing like fine art, you know, it was just paintings and things like that.
Their friendship spans approximately 20 years, dating back to their early days as young artists striving to establish themselves in the Tijuana-San Diego border region.
But he had this idea. And once he like did the first one, then from there, like he just started flourishing. He just like, oh, that's and more ideas because it was possible. And for him, it was a moment of truth where he's like, yeah, I'm actually a comic artist making fine art.
That aha moment that Giancarlo is referring to, where things just click, would shape the course of their friendship and, to some extent, the way they approach art.
A moment that would culminate in their first graphic novel together.
Because he thinks when he draws. That's how he thinks when he's drawing. So when he's drawing, all his ideas are coming out, and he puts it all like that. So it's very, so in that sense, very interesting to see like this sort of like marriage of that moment, I guess, and what happens and how things have like there's like a trigger, and there's also like a, not, I don't want to say a fracture, but there's really like a stamp, right? And in someone's life, there's moments of das. This is a momento. This was the moment where this changed or this shifted. We all have that in our lives. There's not every day, maybe, but there's moments in our life that really mark us deeply, and that's The Fracture, right? But, right? So here we are.
So here we are. After what, 10 years? More than 10 years? 15 years? And we still have one issue.
Hey, It's better than zero. It's printed.
If this is your first time tuning in, you're in for a treat, as you will get to experience something we've been working on with fresh ears.
And eyes.
Yes.
If you have already been following us, we are doing things a bit differently than we normally do. We are premiering Port of Entry Shorts, a new way to tell these cross-border stories.
Video. So we have two for you. One featuring Charles and another Giancarlo, which will be available to see along with this episode.
So pay attention. You will be cued to see them as we tell you their story.
Ready? Vámonos.
Today's bonus episode is all about making art.
And making it with your compadre.
You are listening to Giancarlo and Charles,
Compadres in Art.
Stay tuned.
From KPBS, this is Port of Entry,
where we tell cross-border stories that connect us.
I'm Alan Lilienthal.
And I'm Natalie Gonzalez. If you paid attention late last year, we did a thing.
Sort of Port of Entry.
We hosted our very first live event.
The event was part of the World Design Experience, a signature program of our World Design Capital, San Diego, Tijuana, 2024. And if you checked out our episode from last April called Design Comes to Town, the World Design Capital designation was an opportunity of a lifetime to shape the future of our mega region through the power of design.
As a result, a series of exhibitions in San Diego and Tijuana were put together to flex the region's design muscle.
Talks, art shows, interactive installations, workshops,
and our live event was part of the lineup. And not to pat ourselves on the back, but we killed it.
We had a packed house, an engaged audience, killer guests, the compadres themselves, Giancarlo Ruiz and Charles Glaubitz. They were there to talk about their latest collaboration, The Fracture, the post-apocalyptic neo-Tijuana graphic novel we told you about. And because they're such charismatic and entertaining pair to riff off each other, we invited them to talk about their comic and lead a live reading.
Okay, so a little narrative interlude. Adrian, the beat, please.
In the days leading up to and after the World Design Capital live event, we got to hang out with Giancarlo and Charles to chat about their upbringing, the struggles of making it as an artist in the Tijuana-San Diego region, and the beauty and challenges of finding someone you connect with to collaborate. So this is your cue to pause this podcast and go ahead and watch Giancarlo's dance and Charles's dream. And when you're done, come back to this timestamp.
You can find the link to these videos in the description of the episode.
Go right now while we go on break. Córrale.
Andale.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Splitero, helping homeowners pay for home improvements by offering streamlined access to your home's equity with no additional monthly payments or new debt. Splitero provides a lump sum payment in exchange for a share of your home's future value. Pre-qualification available at Splitero.com.
Welcome back. Now that you've checked out our first two shorts, a bit more background on both Charles and Giancarlo. Charles grew up in Rosarito, a town south of Tijuana mostly known for its spring break activities, while Giancarlo grew up in Playas de Tijuana, the coastal neighborhood just south of the border.
Both are now in their early to mid-50s. Giancarlo's artistic journey began similarly to Charles's with painting, but he felt the pull of theater in his teen years and now gravitates toward mixed media projects. On the other hand, Charles stuck solely with illustration.
Now they're both established working artists reaching the prime of their careers.
And to get a sense of each of their work, they invited us to check out their exhibitions.
First stop, Charles's Hipersigilio. We met Charles last December at Tijuana's Casa de la Cultura for his exhibit Hipersigilio, Spanish for hypersigil. The venue is located in the Altamira neighborhood. It's a huge 1930s Victorian-style school that now serves as a state-sponsored cultural hub for different activities.
Charles's exhibition featured the set of paintings that he was working on in the short video you watched earlier.
You did watch it, right?
Me?
The person listening.
Hola, buenas noches. Hemos cambiado, hemos modificado el espacio. En vez de estar en el teatro, nos venimos aquí a la galería.
As the event was getting started, we joined a small group of people in the theater. After a few minutes of waiting for more visitors to arrive, Charles asked us to move down the hall to the room where his paintings were displayed. His paintings and illustrations varied in size and shape, but his style remained the same. They were hanging on the four walls of the spacious room. And just in case you haven't checked out the video shorts we put together and are still wondering what Charles's art looks like, well, let me help you. Well, there's an extremely palpable, psychedelic, and ethereal feel to it all, as if the paintings are alive and moving. It blends elements of surrealism, mythology, and comic book aesthetics. The typical bold line work, intricate colored details, and mix of geometric and organic forms are present in all the paintings. You can see the recurrent themes of mysticism, alchemy, and cosmic narratives through vibrant, dreamlike, cryptic imagery and storytelling.
Is this hard to picture? Well, think of looking through a kaleidoscope while high on acid and trying to make up the figures you see.
Don't do acid. We don't condone drugs.
Yeah,
this
is
public media.
Yeah, don't do drugs, please. Drink water.
El sigilo es lenguaje. O sea, la palabra que utilizo, o sea, mi habla y la habla de todos.
The exhibit displayed a series of symbols or sigils, those that he was working on during the short video that you gotta go see. For Charles, sigils are a way of transforming the world through symbols. Our ideas, our language, our nonverbal speech are rudimentary symbols or sigils and are our most accessible ways of transforming reality. For instance, when you say thank you or I love you and how that impacts the mood of a listener.
Al transformarse de lo de las cuevas a expresión verbal, se transforma la realidad. Entonces viene siendo como la primera tecnología, ¿no? A transformar. Y esa primera
Hipersigilio is Charles's attempt to lay a sort of instruction guide on how to make a wish or manifest your desires. How to focus them through images and amplify them through the potency of your intention and your level of craft and skill. Hipersigilio, Charles explained to us, is a kind of Large Hadron Collider, but for ideas. Smashing your intentions and desires in a canvas or paper or words or song.
Damn, that sounded cool. Man, I wish I was there. Hey, but what about Giancarlo? Did you go and check out his art too? Because it sounds like Charles is your favorite.
He is. No le digas a Giancarlo. Oh, I'm kidding, Giancarlo. Te quiero mucho. Yes, I did actually get to see one of his screenings, and I love them both. But fun fact, I've actually known Giancarlo since I was like 17. He was a guest teacher at this film program I was doing at the Media Arts Center. So we go way back.
And?
I mean, nothing. I just wanted to share it. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Can we continue with the story?
Yeah, pues, I won't share with you anything ever again. A few months after Charles' exhibit, we went to see a film at the San Diego Film Festival starring none other than Giancarlo. There with our producer Julio was Charles and Charles' partner to show support. Big tub of popcorn and all. The movie is called Soy Lo Que Nunca Fui, or Broken Borders in English, written and directed by Rodrigo Alvarez Flores. It's screened in Mission Valley's AMC as part of the 2025 San Diego Latino Film Festival lineup.
Broken Borders portrays a family's breakdown through the eyes of a struggling single mother, her crime-involved older son, and her younger son facing rejection after coming out as gay.
In it, Giancarlo plays a supporting role as Antonio, a middle-aged man who hires the protagonist, a single mother played by Ángeles Cruz, to take care of his aging father. Giancarlo had met and worked with Ángeles 3 decades ago.
I met her there, and we used to hang out down there, and I hadn't seen her in 30 years. So 30 years later, I get to act with her in a film. You know what I'm saying? I started as a PA, 30 years later.
We made our way to the theater to our seats, and the film started.
Gabriela. El auto trae un rayo. Ayer te quedaste sin gasolina y ahí lo chocas.
Perdón.
No te presto el carro para que lo destruyas.
When Giancarlo finally appeared on the screen, Charles couldn't contain his giggling. Giancarlo's character constantly tries to seduce the protagonist, but in a creepy, awkward way.
Yeah, the scene was pretty cringy.
Mind you, it was a great performance. Giancarlo really made the character feel cringy and awkward, and Charles would just find any moment to have a laugh at Giancarlo's expense.
When the movie ended and the credits rolled, we asked Charles to give us his thoughts about the movie.
And the young actors, the kid actors did really well too. And I think Giancarlo finally had like a role where he could be, I'm not going to say himself, but no, most of the other roles, he's like really over the top, right? So this is, he was not over the top and really straight forward. I think he did a really good job. I really liked it. I really liked how he acted. Okay.
What was his role?
What was his role? His role was to be el viejo puerco.
A pervy old man?
A pervy old man, yeah.
As Charles, Giancarlo, and other festival goers made their way to the reception hall, we said our goodbyes.
When the day of our World Design Capital event came, everyone looked excited and enthusiastic to witness a Port of Entry podcast episode come together alive. The audience were a mix of coworkers, family, friends, and longtime fans.
Catering and refreshments were served, while a video of moments behind the scenes played on loop in the background of KPBS's Community Engagement Center. Giancarlo and Charles were manning a station where they sold copies of their work and signed autographs. Then it was time to move everyone to the studio.
Relax, see everybody here? So, okay, a couple minutes. There you go.
You hide in the back? You?
After everyone was ferried into the studio and found their seats, the show was ready to run. A quick check with Adrian and Lisa, our director of audio operations, for the thumbs up, and tapes started rolling. The on-air sign was turned on, then Julio, very nervously, took it away.
Sort of Port of Entry. We have a afternoon full of delights and cool things for you.
The main screen displayed our logo and would eventually show the script with Spanish translation for our Spanish-speaking guests. Diana Mackey, KPBS's general manager, opened with welcome remarks.
And in order to do this, we need to look at everyone who lives and works in the San Diego region, and that includes our border community. It undeniably.
And then we were ready to rock and roll.
All right, folks. Are you ready for the show?
Yeah.
Oh, are we ready for the show?
Yeah.
There we go. That's what I want to hear. Folks,
Julio got to the run of show and the housekeeping rules.
You could tell he was very nervous, but still held his composure. He did great. You did great, Julio. Aside from the occasional stutter or Spanish-English short circuit, which happens to the best of us.
Yes.
Hey, it was my first time emceeing anything, so give me some slack.
Yeah, I'll cut it. You did great.
Yeah, you did. After a deep breath and a signal to cue the intro beat, Julio asked the crowd to help him welcome us.
They're helping out. Ready? Okay. Next slide. Please help me in welcoming the Port of Entry hosts, Alan Lilienthal and Natalie Gonzalez.
We did our little quinceañera choreographed dance, and the crowd went wild.
After a bit of back and forth and some reflections, it was time to introduce the special guests of the show.
All right. Thank you very much, Natalie Allen. So without further ado, are you all ready to continue? If you can please help me welcome our guests, Giancarlo Ruiz and Charlie Globitz, to the stage.
Wow.
Charles and Giancarlo made their way to the stage and
they were greeted with rapturous applause by the audience. Giancarlo was sporting a knitted guayabera, while Charlie had his signature glasses coupled with a Bruce Lee t-shirt.
Then Julio gave the signal to dim the lights and the signal to roll the videos.
Dim the lights, please. Roll the videos.
Am I waiting for the lights to be dim?
No, that already happened, Alan.
Oh, right. Forgot. The lights were dimmed and the intros were being shown. The audience was drawn to the screen.
After the video shorts were screened, Julio asked for the lights.
Need the lights, please.
We gauged our guests to see their reaction.
Are you?
Oh, right.
So that was. Am I seeing some tears?
Are you crying?
Sure. I'm a crier. Ask my daughters. They laugh at me every time we see a movie.
Oh, man. We got a crier here. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, I'm a tear maker.
Okay. You did a great job on the film. I had never seen it.
That was me either. That was
I remember doing... That was the interview we did with them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was a wild experience to see how you put it together. Are you a filmmaker?
I might be.
maybe Port of Entry should go audiovisual.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think about that? Yeah.
Then we continued with the live reading of the script with a little help from our guests.
Charlie was left. How were you left?
How were you, Charlie?
¿Cómo se pronuncia eso?
He just said it.
Flabbergasted.
¿Flaga qué?
Make our job easier.
Pretty. Agasajado. Charlie was left agasajado.
Flabbergasted.
With his video capsule, while Giancarlo felt very touched with his.
You want to do it again?
Yeah, let's do it again. Yeah. Charlie was left agasajado.
Flabbergasted.
With his video capsule, while Giancarlo was felt very touched with his.
The graphic novel was displayed, and our producer Julio asked Charlie if he could do us the honor.
Charlie read the context of The Fracture.
The Fracture is a comic series about a dystopian post-apocalyptic reality set in Neo-Tijuana. After a failed government experiment causes the San Andreas Fault to split from the mainland, creating its own land known as Babel's Sanctuary. These experiments have caused mutations in Babel's Sanctuary, and one man known as Macburro must battle these mutants to stop the epidemic virus from spreading to the mainland, a story about redemption, resilience, loss, and faith in a time of lost dreams and hopes.
Then it came time to do the live reading of the comic.
Giancarlo took it away.
My every waking moment is always an abrupt one. I gasp, I can't breathe, I got cotton mouth. I'm thirsty, I'm sweaty. I'm a bit confused, to say the least. I can't remember my dreams, just my nightmares. Sometimes I have nightmares of Roman empires with dusty old gold laying in the corners of every church and state.
If you'd like to check out the full live reading, check out the Port of Entry live episode that dropped with this one.
Thank you very much, Giancarlo.
All right.
Are you an actor? Yeah. Once they were done with the live reading, we asked what exactly inspired them to set the story in the Tijuana border region. Charles and Giancarlo had contrasting answers about setting the story in Tijuana. So we're wondering what exactly inspired you to set The Fracture in the Tijuana border region. And how has this setting influenced the story of The Fracture?
I think, right now that I'm just trying to do a little bit more introspection, I think I didn't want to set it in Tijuana because Tijuana has such a specific connotation of the city. It's historical.
Giancarlo confessed that he had always been hesitant to use Tijuana as a setting, as he feels that the city has been maligned in the media.
In such a way that any fictional portrayal is almost forced to adopt a certain connotation that reinforces the violent, lawless, gringo backyard, even though he feels the city has changed for the better over the years.
I can attest to that, and people, friends that are from here, from San Diego, from Los Angeles, that come to Tijuana, sometimes they're surprised at what the city is, you know, because I think, like any part, it depends where you're hanging out, right? You can get in trouble, for sure. But, you know, Tijuana has changed a lot over the years. But I think that was it. I think I didn't want that to be...
I always wanted it to be in Tijuana.
Yeah, I know.
Charles felt that by renaming the city...
As the city would be part of the fictional geographical break apart from the mainland...
It could derive some new meaning.
But, after, you know, a couple of years ago, it's like, well, let's not name it Tijuana, but what if we name the archipelago Neo-Tijuana? And that doesn't put... Mm. Doesn't put it in a place, but it makes the whole place a place, if that makes sense. And I think
finally
agreed.
Yeah, it becomes like a real fiction of the fiction. Mm. So then we can actually play with the story itself. And we don't have to take from facts or from anything that's real or that we think it's real or stereotypes. We just create a new myth of Tijuana.
Charles left us with this thought about Tijuana and the symbiotic relationship between the city and San Diego.
It's also a place where everything blooms, right? An example would be San Diego would not bloom if Tijuana was not there, because when I would cross in the mornings to go to school, because I studied at San Diego City College, I would take the trolley, and it was just not me. It was thousands of people crossing the border to make this city work, to make this city function. So I think I always saw that as a metaphor, and I'm not going to say it because it's, but a different. This is a more politically correct metaphor, that it's a blooming into the city, that it would make it work. So, to me, Tijuana was more. That's how I see it. More on that kind of part than what the media sells.
Yeah.
Due to time constraints, we couldn't get through all of our questions.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Paint Care, offering households and businesses in California more than 800 leftover paint drop-off sites for recycling. Quantities of 100-plus gallons of paint may qualify for a large volume pickup. Learn more at paintcare.org.
During the live event. So we agreed to follow up with the pair the next month. Before we go into that, Port of Entry will be back after a short break. You are listening to Port of Entry.
As we had agreed to a month prior, we met at Charles's home in Playas de Tijuana to follow up on how the fracture came about.
Chicos, help yourselves. We got some savory.
Esta no voy a compartir con nadie.
Our producer Julio brought some pan dulce to stimulate their way down memory lane.
Giancarlo immediately recognized where it was from.
De la Denise, ahí por la Emilia.
Yeah.
Los panes largos, los panes como largos.
¿Los bajes?
Sí, pero dulces, que tienen semillas de girasol.
Ah, sí, ahí tienen.
Charles pulled out the Italian cafetera, signaling that the Mexican tía's sewing circle was ready to begin. His living room resembled an exhibit hall, filled with comic book memorabilia, posters, and some of his past creations. The space was flanked by an extensive library featuring mythology, classic literature, and comics by diverse artists, from Hayao Miyazaki and Jack Kirby to Kentaro Miura. But the sewing circle couldn't get revved enough without the now ritualistic roasting of our producer Julio, who failed to call the Italian cafetera by its proper Italian name.
Es espresso, eh?
Sí, o sea, no te sirvas. Sí.
Yeah, okay. That's an Italian espresso maker.
Okay, pensé que viste más.
It's a mocha. It's called a mocha.
No, lo sé, cabrón, pero espérame. Es que
yo tenemos que educarlo,
güey. Sí, güey. Que no sale de playas, güey.
Es que yo pensé que estaba...
Ay, te traían de bajada, Julio.
Yeah, they were breaking his balls a little bit.
Dude, all of production. Adrian, roll the WhatsApp messages to have them see what I'm talking about.
El Julio siempre tiene la boca llena porque siempre se la loncha.
Y sí, el Julio siempre se la loncha de lo que... Me he puesto a investigar lo que he encontrado en el internet. Hay varias notas ahí de que tanto se la loncha. Se la lonchó tanto una vez que se desmayó.
Vamos otra vez a cambiar los horarios porque el Julio se la loncha bien delicioso. Porque le encanta cambiar las fechas todo el tiempo.
Hey, why wasn't I in the chat group?
Alan was the admin, I don't know.
Hey, Alan, why do you exclude women from a place of work?
I'm looking at the WhatsApp group right now, I wasn't the admin, it's Giancarlo.
Hey, Giancarlo, do you hate women?
Yeah.
We're kidding. We know you don't.
I just smoked one too many. Anyways,
as the strong espresso and pan dulce were stimulating their memories, and Charles took it away with the circularity of producing art,
when Giancarlo made a suggestion that would eventually make our producer's life miserable in putting this episode together.
Yeah.
Feeling the need to dull the sharpness of their coffee, the pair decided to roll up some of California's finest. Charles stepped into the kitchen and returned moments later with a box of tea bags and assorted cannabis accoutrement. Finally settled at the table again, they resumed reminiscing about the first time they met.
which was through a mutual acquaintance who neither of them speaks to anymore.
Yeah, and Sal was there, and I just, you know.
You were like a diva.
No, but I wasn't a diva. I just couldn't get too close because Sal is very jealous of his friends. He's very like, so I couldn't get close to Charles because he was like,
fuck that guy.
Right? So I had to wait for a moment for him and I to like talk without him, and then we like, oh, okay. We're connected.
All right, gracias.
It'll depend how damaged you want to get.
Well, not too damaged.
Well, damaged, but you get more.
Okay.
That's
the opposite.
Heroic dose, my guy.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
You'll just see Giancarlo walking around in his underwear like in a couple of minutes.
Wait. They smoked weed in front of you? And you guys didn't?
Wait, really? You think we would? We're professionals.
Professional weed smokers.
Dude, we had an all-staff meeting that day and did not feel like, I don't know, losing my job.
Yeah, whatever. You too, Alan?
I mean, maybe in the past I would have, but I'm a new man now and I had to focus and get to my other 9-to-5 job. And, you know, it kind of gives me squirrel brain.
Yeah, it gave both Giancarlo and Charles squirrel brain for sure.
You could see in Julio's face that he dreaded going down this road. He tried to give the conversation some guardrails to focus, but...
And then it's like, brief as possible. We only have 20 minutes, guys.
He has to leave in a fucking hour.
There was some pushback, you could say. We were there to work, but they were there to have a good time, as they should. And it wouldn't be complete without Charles or Giancarlo letting the characters that live inside their heads take a peek.
USMC, Marine, your head. 2-2-3-3-9-9. Super five.
We came around to ask him about how their friendship flourished and how it led to the creation of The Fracture.
I think it came out of friendship. I think this what we're doing right now is what we would do, right? So the weekend would come, and I think Giancarlo was working at the UCSD as a video technician,
media specialist for the UCSD Visual Arts graduate program.
So, and I was a adjunct professor at San Diego City College teaching illustration.
They were both in their early 30s, and the story of how they met is something akin to meeting a star brother. Well, a fellow twisted star brother.
We had, at some point, had kind of seen each other, and we knew about each other, and we've been in shows together as well, but we have never really...
And we talked at the party, so we talked about Jodorowsky and my love for Jodorowsky and his love of David Lynch and how, you know, they're both really, they're poetic. They're poets. And then, I don't know, then somehow you invited me to your birthday party?
Yeah, it was my birthday party. I did.
Right, and then there I met my neighbor, Mechita, and her brother, the butcher. And we talked. It wasn't weird. It's not that weird. It's a normal party, right?
They hit it off. Their friendship flourished. Many, many attempts to put plans together came about.
They would bounce ideas off each other, work on ideas for scripts together, exhibit their paintings together, or just party excessively.
At one point, they would see each other almost every day because Giancarlo moved 3 houses down from where Charles was living, and that really piqued their involvement with each other, even though Charles had family to take care of.
Exact.
So by the time you got to The Fracture, you guys had already kind of established a rhythm between the two of you.
Oh, yeah.
Pues sí, ya pimponeamos, pues. Yeah, it was like...
We were neighbors.
Yeah.
He was
3
houses down the row of me.
Casi diario.
So you were the neighbor.
Uh-huh. I was a married man, right? I was the dad.
By the way, pimponeo is their word for collaborating, bouncing off ideas, and trying to put stuff together.
Even at impertinent times.
Around the weekends where he's partying, not with me, but he's partying in Tijuana. After he stopped partying, he would call me, hey, dude, are you working? Are you up? I usually, around that time, I worked late. And he would come into my house really fucked up.
Is this how The Fracture came to be?
No, I don't know. I don't know what this guy's talking about, really. I don't know who this guy is.
By the time the fractures started to come about, they had a solid understanding of each other, and when they started to really get in the moment...
When we really needed to get on tape how the fracture came about...
All right, guys.
All right.
All right.
Can both of you describe the process of collaborating on the novel? Like, how did you guys come to align your visions, your different visions, and your different ideas about what this should be?
Another squirrel moment.
We're trying to get...
Yeah, well, what's that?
Alan, what's going on?
I have no idea.
Okay, sorry, Alan.
Okay. Can you repeat your question?
Yeah, I can.
They would lose track at different points, and we had to reel them back in.
As the high wore off, the memories started coming together bits at a time, and they got in the zone.
And I took, when I went to Cannes, I took that project, Circus Medusa, because that's the script that I had been writing. And that's what I went to pitch. So when I came back from France, I wanted to do something.
Giancarlo hit a stride of focus.
He remembered an unsuccessful stint in the Cannes Film Festival. He pitched a script that he was working on, called Circus Medusa, that no one picked up. And when he came back, he wanted to shake off the rejection funk with Charles's help.
I came back, and I wanted to do something, and I couldn't sell anything, remember? So I wanted to do something, and I wanted to do a quick movie. There was going to be like horror, and it was going to take one character. It was going to be a spin-off from one of my shorts, Disease, the character Macburro, who was this taquero who wears a donkey mask. But I was going to do, it was going to be like a slasher film, right? Because I said, fuck it, I'll do something quick, something I can just fucking así sacarlo, no? And I had the story. Right, and then Charles goes, why don't we do...
Because I love that character.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah, yeah.
Come on, that's me. I'm Macburro, bro.
The character that, and you lost that outfit, didn't you, Janko?
I don't even say that, bro. No, I don't think so. I know where it's at.
Really? It exists?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Charles suggested turning the Circus Medusa script into a graphic novel.
Giancarlo was not a big fan of the idea.
To turn Circo Medusa into a graphic novel. I said, no, I don't want to do it with Circo Medusa.
We did a shot.
No, right. Yeah, because that's what we did before when I went to France, because I took that. So we did a sequence, right? You drew a sequence.
We got to publish that.
That'd be cool.
That way we're really done in the past. Can be something we can sell right now, we can create at this moment to share.
And you already have a graphic novel.
It's not a graphic novel.
No.
You already have another...
Well, there's a possibility. I think
that's our first sequential narrative.
Exact.
He gave Charles the option of illustrating Macburro, originally a character who was a taquero that would butcher corpses in a zombie slasher flick Giancarlo produced in 2006, in which that character, Macburro, had a couple of cameos.
From there, they decided to explore the character Macburro. And from there, the pimponeo hit maximum level.
But Giancarlo wanted to go deep.
Okay, you know what? If si lo vamos a hacer de Macburro, I'm not just gonna do it about Macburro. You know, I'm not gonna let me go deep. Let me think about a really cool narrative that we can do, because production value, in a sense, I mean, it's gonna be you, right? It's gonna be more of the imagery. But if I want to do like an action scene, he can illustrate it beautifully, right? So I was like, well, let me dream then. Let me try to write something, you know, epic. And that was like, inspired by what he was doing, that I was like, all right, let me see how we can marry ideas.
From that point, Macburro became the protagonist of their story, and the fracture pretty much wrote and illustrated itself.
Their synergy was in overdrive, bouncing ideas off each other, building ideas on top of those ideas, with a lot of that excessive partying in between.
Because this is, to begin with, this is not my medium, right?
Yeah.
So we talk about even like he'll show me like framing, this is how we can do this, do that. He'll interpret it, and then I'll be like, well, and sometimes I'll be like, maybe this could work like this or something, but basically.
One moment, Charles would come up with a mock-up, and that would set Giancarlo into a writing frenzy, or it would be the other way around.
Something that Giancarlo would write would light up Charles's imagination, and he would open a window in that world. they had entered a synchronized field, one rocketing ideas at the other and the other pushing it back.
Like cracked up manic ping pong players.
Obviously, when he'll draw something and maybe there's something there that he'll be like, oh, what if we do this? For example, I remember the name of La Taqueria, La Verdad, that was your idea.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? So it was the idea of like, the truth, right? The behind it.
Is this something that he wrote in the panel or that you saw?
No, no, that he like basically.
He wrote it. I drew it.
I wrote it.
Okay.
But it the name.
So you fill in the details.
I would suggest details or like it's not my story, but it's my world, or it's me interpreting his world narratively. But then it's like it needs this. It needs that. Could it be this?
Charles took a moment and headed to one of his boxes. He started ruffling around and found some sketches and loose prints.
And are there?
Then I show it to him. Aquí a tu derecha.
Are there some details that you see filled in that then give you like sort of feedback that give you more ideas?
Yeah, of course.
Can you give an example?
So are you asking us if we're in a feedback loop?
Yeah.
Feedback loop? Yeah.
It
has to be reciprocal. But there has to be a feeling of reciprocity. Right? Push and pull.
He brought a sketchbook with a bundle of loose prints to the table and handed them to Julio. It was the Project Bible.
The collection of original handprints, storyboards, sketches, mock-ups, and hand panels of the fracture. Julio's eyes peeled, completely impressed by the intricate detail of Charles's work.
After Julio was done skimming through the collection, he passed it down to Giancarlo. Giancarlo's face lit up. He couldn't contain his excitement. The excitement of someone who knew he had something special in his hands.
Right. No, es que este pedo, güey. Come on, bro. Come on, bro.
O sea,
no seas mamón, güey. Güey, esa madre, güey. So obviously, you know, little details, and then we'll talk about it as well. It becomes something. So it's like
what started as an intent to brush off a rejection funk became a web series with weekly editions that eventually was distilled into The Fracture Volume 1.
As they say, one door closes and another one opens.
I think it's, I don't remember the last time in a sense that we've really figured it out. You know what I mean? It's still sort of like a...
Some panels, dude.
Sí, no, está cabrón. But everything's here. Everything's here, basically.
We're trying to figure out how to make money with it.
Yeah, how to make money. We're going to make money for sure. The Fracture is it's a thing. That story is unique, my boy.
The hunger was there. The art was there. Only thing missing was the money. Which led us to wonder,
how did they deal with that challenge throughout their careers before The Fracture?
I taught classes at San Diego City College, and it would help us get by, but it was a struggle as my my art career and my illustration career would ebb and flow up and down. So teaching was like the mainstay, and then
Charles would manage his time between being a single father to two daughters after splitting with the mother of his kids, working part-time as a teacher in UCSD and illustrating in his free time.
Until a shift in tides.
I remember we were in L.A. There was a show in L.A. at the consulate in Los Angeles, Mexican consulate in Los Angeles, and we all stayed in one room, so I was sleeping on the floor, and then woke up, and that morning they gave the results for the this grant called Sistema Nacional de Creadores from FONCA, and it had opened the first category, the first year, opened the category of graphic narrative, sequential art, and I was the first recipient. So from struggling, right, I immediately went into stability. And it was an opportunity for me to dive deep to do what I wanted to do, which was to make comics.
From then on, more clients started hiring him.
One of whom he brought Giancarlo on board for, as he's also an experienced mixed media artist.
Client found me on the internet for this job for Jose Cuervo. It's called Write Your Cinco. So it was like this huge idea from this huge advertising company, McCann in New York, which is like the legendary advertising company. And the idea was people would tweet what Cinco de Mayo was, and I would paint it in a large mural. And then people whose tweets were selected to be part of that mural would get sent their art to them. They invested like, it was a lot of money. Yeah, so I brought in Giancarlo to be my right-hand man, and we worked on it, and the client sucked so much that it killed the project. They were so afraid about so many things, outside things, of that the company's lawyers kind of killed the project, and it never really blew up as I expected. And then, you know, another client found me and then started working for doing advertising illustration for Miller Lite and generating ideas for branding and whatnot. And that went on for a couple of years.
That was 13 years ago. Since then, Charles has achieved professional stability. His illustration work makes up 100% of his income.
On the other hand, Giancarlo's financial stability still depends on other non-acting gigs.
Well, I mean, I think it's always been a challenge because my background is theater, it's film. So in that world, when you start, usually you don't get paid. It's mostly, you want to get the credit, you want to get the opportunity. And also a lot of, you know, directors, and they'll sell it to you that, hey, you know, this is a great opportunity, you know, you shouldn't worry about money or this or that. So all my life, since I can remember, even the stuff that I produced, everything has been with my own money. I've never sort of like asked for scholarships. I've applied for grants. I've never won them. So I'm not one to just stop doing things. So I've always had like a job, some type of job, some type of part-time, something that will, you know, generate me the necessary income, and then all the other time.
The reality is that in Giancarlo's field, only a slim minority of artists can completely live from their acting gigs. That's why he does other things to supplement his income.
So I think the struggle for me is like real. It's daily because it's auditions, getting rejected from auditions. So it's, you have to have like a mental prowess. You have to really be strong. And sometimes it's difficult to think if you want to keep going because you're not where you think you were going to be, or you're not getting what you think that you should be getting, or because there's still up to this day, even though I've already, you know, have a big resume and have a sort of like a career in the background, still to this day, to get paid, it's a struggle. And to get paid what I'm supposed to be paid.
The royalties?
No, everything. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's always the struggle, the money is there, I guess, but I don't think about it. I try not to think about it. And I just create. And, you know, if I can sell something more than, now that I've been, you know, doing more of, you know, drawings and mixed media and stuff, you know, which is a way for me to still be creative. You know, it's still a hustle.
Even though Giancarlo faces some struggles, he still finds time to help others who are in the same boat. He hopes that the time he invests in his own work
and in supporting others, you
know, will pay off down the road.
Like somebody just reached out recently. I like the script. It's a short film. It's a young director. I just met him. I spoke with him. He's Brazilian. I really liked him. I like his ideas. And I said, yeah, I'll do it. And, you know, I'm not going to charge. It's, you know, just free, sort of like in a sense of giving back. Because I also believe that in my industry, you have to give back. You have to turn around and see who's coming up, and you have to sort of invest in that as well at some point.
Nevertheless, he keeps doubling down. They both keep doubling down with themselves and each other.
The question here is, if you know you're not going to make money, if you know that it's not going to be a stable thing, why do you keep doing it? Why? I think it's because you believe in what you have, you believe in yourself, and you love what you do, and you double down on yourself. And this is, you have your dice and you throw it. Can you keep throwing it? You keep throwing it, even though you know that you might not become, you know, a millionaire. You might not. You still do it because it's in you. It's a gift that you have. all this right here, right, that you see around here, all these paintings by Charles, you know, all this stuff, it's not just, it didn't just happen. You know, it does, you know what I mean? It didn't just appear out of nowhere. It just, and he still does it.
Charles does it, Giancarlo says, because it matters, because it gives him purpose, because the art deserves to be created. And Giancarlo is willing to fund that because the art deserves to be seen, even if the money is coming out of his own pocket.
Right? It doesn't matter. And he goes from painting, he goes to like narrative, he goes to, you know, from to illustration, graphic design, you know. He still does it because that's also like the only thing he knows in a sense that for him makes him happy, makes him feel accomplished. And that's how I feel as well with myself. It makes me happy. It makes me feel accomplished, even though it might not accomplishment or whatever that be has its own different kind of like levels or standards. I still think it's, hey, you know, like the fracture for me, that was an accomplishment. And it makes me happy to see it, that it's there, right? It's like, okay, it's there. My time invested is there. Time and space is there. And it's printed money, right? That's what we always say, printed money. We just gotta know what bank we'd like to deposit this printed money.
Our time with Charles and Giancarlo made us realize something. Their dynamic often resembles that of siblings. They can be abrasive at times as they break each other's balls, but the deep care for each other is obvious. And how they look at each other when the other is talking and how that care permeates into the work they do together.
That's the magic, the holy grail of collaboration, so to speak. Finding someone to work with that can read you like a book. The Fracture would not have been born if it wasn't for that love and patience they have for each other.
I mean, in today's standards, in a sense of collaboration, well, our collaboration started from the day we met. You know, that day that we met and we, you know, had a long conversation, like a 10-hour at that party till the morning. Just he and I outside in this like terrace. And everybody's like inside and we were just out there, you know, just smoking cigarettes and drinking beer and talking all night. All night.
Smoking weed.
Yeah. All night. Till the morning. And I said, fuck. I love this guy. You know? And I think you said, yeah, me too.
Their compadrazgo, or bromance, pushed them both through their darkest of times.
And sailed them through tempestuous seas.
And hopefully to more bountiful shores.
Compadres, a ship we can all sail on.
Wow, I wish we had that.
What?
I mean, me and Nat have that.
Yeah, we're best friends.
Roll the credits!
This episode of Port of Entry was written and produced by Julio Cesar Ortiz Franco.
Adrian Villalobos is technical producer and sound designer.
This episode was edited by Elma González Lima Brandao.
Lisa Morissette is director of audio programming and operations.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Soy Alan Lilintal.
Y yo soy Natalie González.
Nos vemos pronto.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the National Conflict Resolution Center. Geopolitics, a divisive election year, and strained budgets are all topics that can create tension in the workplace. NCRC can help workplace leaders navigate polarizing issues with the Culture, Communication, and Conflict Certificate. More at ncrconline.com.